So what are we starting with this week?
We review.
Every week he beats me and he's on a delay as well.
Very good, Luke. Well done. And Jamp, try harder next time.
Yeah, I will. Jamp.
This one says extremely good and it's got 5 stars.
Woo!
Yes. So it says surprisingly good to study with and gives me extra knowledge in classes.
Mm.
Oh, very nice.
That's
very
good. That is the aim of the podcast.
Yes, it is. So thank you very
much. Tonight's working.
Shall we start with the show?
Yes.
Start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guy, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp, and Luke Cutforth. And
this Hello. Week,
special guest, Kim.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
This week, we're talking about attention deficit and hyperactivity.
Ah, this one has been highly requested patrons, yeah.
It has been, yeah. And Kim, in particular, has been specifically requested by our patrons for this episode.
Because that's all I am to people.
You have one trait. You get one trait on the internet.
They're
and
like,
that's
oh, why don't
that's
you get in the person who never makes videos?
See no, if that's she can make him. Yeah. That's me.
And me, to be fair. I just make Sci Guy's videos.
No, so what is ADHD? Does anyone know?
I think Kim might.
Don't pass this on to me.
I have no one else to look at. You're the only one in the room. Oh.
So ADHD stands for Attention Deficit and Hyperactivity Disorder, and it is a neurodevelopmental disorder categorized by symptoms including, but not limited to, inattention and executive functioning issues.
Yeah, spot on. I think that's the best answer we've had on the podcast ever.
Me and Luke
probably because this one was the right question for me, right?
Shall we move on to what the symptoms of ADHD are?
Yes, yep. Please. I need to know.
So, well, these are the diagnostic criteria from the DSM-5, from the DSM, basically. Yeah. So, you've basically got two different sections of symptoms. You've got your inattention, and you've got your hyperactivity and impulsivity. So, you basically, to be diagnosed, you need to have an ongoing pattern of these. Mm. You've got to have 6 or more of these symptoms in more than one sort of scenario for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And they had to have been present before you were 12 years old.
Okay.
And there are a few other things. I'll get to those in the end. But the first section is the inattention. So you've got to have at least 6 of these ones for at least 6 months. And if you don't, then you probably won't get diagnosed with ADHD. So not paying close attention to details or making careless mistakes. Difficulty maintaining attention in activities. Not listening when spoken to directly. Ignoring instructions. Difficulty organizing. Disliking or avoiding tasks which require sustained mental effort. Losing things needed for tasks. Easily... You're slapping here. Am I just rattling just like, off your life?
It's just one of those things where like, it's like... You know when you describe the symptoms of depression and you're like, God, man, that sounds so sad. That's just sad. It's like ADHD is just like, describe like someone who seems kind of like an asshole. And then there you go. That's why.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, to be fair. And it's a shame because a lot of kids get labeled as being disruptive when really they've just got ADHD.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So the other ones for inattention are easily distractible. And forgetful in daily activities. So yeah, I mean, if you have 6 of those, you could be, for at least 6 months, you could be diagnosed with ADHD, so long as you've had them before you were 12. And then there's the hyperactivity and impulsivity. So you need to have at least 6 of these as well for 6 months, at least. So high level of fidgeting, not sitting still or leaving a seat when expected to sit, running and climbing in situations where it's inappropriate.
Feeling very on show right now. Just like, do not move. Seen.
Yeah, Kim, please stay seated for the entire.
Well, I was going to say, it's very good that you are expected to sit, but you have maintained sitting. So
I have, yeah.
You're
so
cured.
Cancel the diagnosis.
Wow.
It has only been 5 minutes, though. So, you know.
Very true.
Come back to me in 6 months. We'll see if I've done it.
Unable to engage in activities quietly, excessive talking, blurting out an answer before the question is finished, having difficulty...
Hey, I do that! Sorry, I just did it.
Yeah, I was going to try and do it to make the joke, but I didn't know what you were going to say, so I couldn't blurt out an answer. Because I wasn't listening, that was the problem.
Yeah, no, I actually do that as well. I answer a question before it's finished, and it's very frustrating, because I always try and stop it, but I don't realize until
try and preempt what the question's going to be.
Well, I'm listening to the question. I'm like, oh, I know what the question is, and then my brain's like, oh, well, I've got the answer. I'll just say it now.
I'll just say it before the question's done. Yeah, save some time, you know.
Yeah, I know.
See, now I got a bit of a rude awakening in this. In this way, which is that I'm doing a degree at the moment, and one of the questions I was like, oh, I know where this question is going. I'll just write the answer. And then I checked the answers and I got loads wrong because I just didn't read the question to the end.
No.
I learned.
Hey.
Learn to read questions before answering.
I read the start of them.
Yes, not the end.
Not the question part, though, which is at the end, really.
The bit with the question mark. Yeah.
All right.
So having difficulty waiting their turn or interrupting or intruding on others frequently. So you need, like I've said many times, you need to have these symptoms before the age of 12 in at least two settings. And the symptoms need to reduce the quality of educational, social, or occupational ability. Mm. And this is one of my favorite ones. You get this in so many different sort of disorders. So when you're diagnosing disorders, you've always got this bullet point. Symptoms do not occur during schizophrenia or another psychotic disorder and are not better explained by another mental disorder.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a catch-all. It's like, if you haven't got these things, then you probably have ADHD.
Well, I guess. I think it's more a case of like, if you've got something else, then we'll not call it ADHD. We'll just call it that thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's because like ADHD is one of those, like, well, all things, anything that you would diagnose is just a group of symptoms, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially with someone like ADHD, where they don't concretely know the exact cause of it. So they can't be like, whoop, there it is. So they just it's a collection of symptoms. And because they're symptoms that everyone else struggles with sometimes too, you really need to rule other things out. Mm. Like, yeah. Because there are some, like, anxiety can give you executive dysfunction. So can depression. So
in there.
Very true.
They just gotta double check.
No, yeah, that's so true. I mean, this is the thing with anything sort of neurodevelopmental. My mouth did not want to get around that word. Anything neurodevelopmental or sort of psychological, it's very difficult unless we've got a concrete sort of pathway for it that we understand to diagnose, because it's basically, like you said, we're basically just looking at symptoms. Yeah. So until you've got like, yes, this is exactly how this happens, then you can't really diagnose it as its own disorder.
Mm.
I find that really interesting. Those are the sort of diagnostic criteria. You don't need to have all of them. In fact, there are different sort of subtypes of ADHD. There's the ADHD with predominantly inattentive, and the alternative being ADHD predominantly hyperactive or impulsive, or you could have a combination of both. Mm. Now, the thing is that to have the inattentive, you need to have six or more of the inattentive symptoms and less than six of the other symptoms, and vice versa.
Right.
So those are the two. Those are the two subtypes, and then the combined, which just doesn't sound very, very fun to have to deal with. To be perfectly honest, no. It's very interesting actually, because 5% of school age kids have been diagnosed with ADHD, and only 2.5% of adults are generally diagnosed with ADHD. And it's more common in boys. Kim, do you know why it might be more common in boys?
Oh, got an inkling. It's same with the early study of autism. They didn't study autism. They studied autism in white men. And so they found, that it happens more to white men, but that's because that was the only part of the study.
How
it's just the
strange.
Same. But it's also like, I think a lot of the symptoms, particularly for, I've heard that it's more common for women to have the inattentive type. Mm. And really, like, the reason they're the same condition is because the root cause of the symptoms is the same impairment in the brain. And I think it's just the way that different people are socialized that makes them come out in different ways. For boys, it's more socially acceptable in a lot of settings to be like a class clown, to be quite loud and interrupting, and they're confident. Whereas girls will be like told to keep quiet and be ladylike. So I think a lot of women grow up learning to kind of internalize symptoms to sort of a daydreaminess and a restlessness in the mind instead of like a outward loudness.
Mm. And to be fair, you do see that a lot with, you mentioned autism. You see that a lot in autism as well, with apparently girls being much better at masking.
And
so girls can go underdiagnosed despite having similar rates of autism. And with ADHD as well, apparently, that higher percentage of boys being diagnosed is due to a bias in the diagnosis. And another thing with ADHD as well is that because part of ADHD, the sort of diagnosis of ADHD, as we've said, it needs to reduce the quality of educational, social, or occupational ability. That's very difficult to quantify. That can be altered by culture. Mm. That can be different depending on, you know, sort of the way you're raised, who you're around. It's got lots of different sort of factors that can you sort of influence it. So it's not quite as simple as, oh, this person has ADHD and this person also has ADHD in completely different circumstances.
Yeah. Well, it's also like that you could have every symptom, but unless it's negatively impacting, I think it's two or more areas of your life, then you wouldn't get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of an acknowledgement, I guess, that it's not inherently a disorder as in brain bad. It's like, it's kind of a recognition of that it's a neurodivergence. Like it's potentially a different way of the brain working that in certain settings will be a benefit, but in a lot of Western professional settings is not a benefit at all.
That's interesting. Yeah. What settings, in which settings would it be a benefit?
Well,
do you have any idea?
I don't know if you encountered this on your research, Corey. I read an article a while ago that I cannot give you the source of, that was looking at why ADHD would have been so prevalent, like as an evolutionary benefit, because like the only way it could have survived would be if it was a benefit. And they reckon that it was beneficial to the pack, but not to the individual. So like risk-taking behaviors, like not being so into a task that your focus is there, that you miss sort of predatory or potentially dangerous sounds, so that they would be beneficial to the survival of a whole tribe of people, and therefore the gene would keep going. But then individually, it's just one of those things that isn't super good. But that means that like there was a study, I can't remember where it was, but there was like a nomadic tribe and they studied... they looked for symptoms of ADHD in the people from that gene pool that had moved into the cities versus the people from that gene pool that had remained living how that tribe lived. And the technical symptoms were still there, but the effect on their lives were just irrelevant because it made them good hunters. It made them fast. It made them have energy. So it is environmental, I think.
I mean, that's really interesting because, right, this is a fictional example, an incredibly fictional example, but that's almost the exact story of Percy Jackson. If you know,
sure.
Yeah, Percy Jackson's got ADHD, and it's because actually he's a Greek god, and it's fighting instinct, which like I think is really great interpretation. But yeah, I mean, the thing is that these symptoms, obviously, executive dysfunction is. Well, we'll explain what Kim. Do you want to explain what executive dysfunction is?
Yeah, it's very hard to say, isn't it?
I can't get
every time. Like,
words. Yeah.
Yeah. So executive dysfunction. Is an impairment of the executive functions. And the executive functions are the processes in the brain, usually hanging out in the frontal lobe, that organization, basically. So things that make humans unique from animals, in that we can calculate cause and effect, we can inhibit our emotions and impulses, and we can like have all this stimuli coming in, but make a conscious, like, intelligent decision about how to respond to them instead of just like central nervous system immediate response. And so with that, then also by having that awareness all the time, you have a unique sense of time that other animals don't have. And then
right.
We don't have that so good, which makes us really bad at time.
Yeah. Yeah. You once gave a really, really good sort of description of how that would come about in sort of daily life with, I think,
the sock.
Was it that? I think I mugged a cup
theory?
Of tea or something.
Oh, the cup of tea. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So, but I had a description of what executive dysfunction feels like in the moment when it's like, because executive dysfunction is one of those things where it's sort of the inability to do all of those things will have this overarching effect on your life and the way you interact with the environment around you. But then there are also moments where you're unable to do something and it's really obvious that you're experiencing executive dysfunction. Like, oh, I am unable to process how to do this task. And that's a really difficult one to explain to people because it's like, why don't you just get out of bed? And I'm like, I don't know. So the way that I describe that one is like, you know, when you're carrying a bunch of laundry and one sock falls down and you've got like all this stuff in your hands and you're like, oh, should I pick up the sock? But then I might drop all the pile of laundry, or should I go to the washing machine and then come back for the sock? And that moment where you're like frozen, like a deer in the headlights holding the laundry, that's what it feels like to be sort of stuck in one of those very obvious moments where I'm like, I should get dressed and I know my clothes are there and I know that my body is here, but I just, there's too many options that would change the outcome for my brain to settle on step one and then continue the path. And then the other analogy that I gave was like, there is a part of you that's kind of, if I'm struggling with something like that, I know like, oh, cool, this is executive dysfunction. I know what that is. So then why with my intelligent, conscious part of my mind, can I not just be like, oh, this is how we order the steps of a task? And it's like, say your housemate is rushing out to work and they leave a mug of tea on the table and they're like, oh, can you put that in the sink when you get a chance? You're like, yep, sick, I will. And they rush out. And then you carry on watching TV because you're not rushing to work. Mm. And then there's another housemate. And the other housemate is like, you haven't put the mug in the sink yet. And you're like, I know, I'm just going to watch this thing. And they're like, okay. And then 10 seconds later, they're like, you still haven't put the mug in the sink. And you're like, I know. Like, this is a low priority task that fits into my day somewhere. And it's not an emergency. Because that wouldn't make sense to nag someone about such a small thing. Sometimes trying to order the steps of a task gives my brain the same sense of like confusion and panic as that kind of nagging would, because it's placed every task I have to do in the figure this out later pile.
Right.
And it doesn't sense that any of them are a current event, urgent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. You've got a really good way of sort of describing this stuff. So that
it's taken a long time. Like, if you'd asked me all of this 5 years ago, I would have been like, I don't know. I just can't get up. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I'm glad you sorted it out now. Well, I mean, understand it now.
Yeah, you know, understand. I can do the words now, and that's something.
Yeah, that is. It is. So that's. I don't even know where we were. We're talking about executive dysfunction.
Executive dysfunction.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. We were talking about that thing. What were we talking about?
Executive dysfunction.
That's right.
Is this a trick question?
No, I just don't want to. I just can't say it. My mouth won't get around it. But yeah, just quickly going back to the sort of difference in diagnosis of boys and girls. Actually, so there's slightly different symptoms, obviously. You mentioned that in girls, you usually see the inattentive sort of thing. But apparently, the difference in symptoms sort of evens out later in adolescence and then moving into adulthood. So a lot of the sort of difference in diagnosis and the difference in symptoms that are more prevalent could be, in a lot of cases, down to teacher and parent bias in reporting. And
that makes sense.
Diagnosing and all of those things. Yeah. So that's another thing that I think is really interesting that we don't often consider, that sort of medicine, I guess, the medical world isn't free from bias, and neither is science.
As we've discussed many times before.
I think we have quite a few. Yeah. So especially with things like this, you know, you've got to be really careful because a lot of people will outright say, oh yeah, ADHD, that's just a thing that boys have, you know, because obviously it's just a thing that boys have. Or they'll say something like, oh yeah, girls can have ADHD, but it's way less common and it's totally different. And it's just because girls are just different. Well, it's not because girls are different. It's just because you treat girls different, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you tell a girl to be quiet all the time, she's probably going to end up doing it at some point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eventually.
Good. Shall we talk about the causes of ADHD? Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. So there are different causes, obviously. There are sort of biological, psychological factors. There are a lot of different factors. There are environmental factors as well. Let's first talk about the biological stuff. So the genetics. Do you know anything about the genetics behind ADHD?
I know that if someone has ADHD, they are very likely that someone, it's very likely that someone in their immediate family also has ADHD.
Yeah. So,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of the most sort of heritable of these kinds of disorders, by which I mean, it's one of the most heritable sort of neurodivergencies. And the thing here is that we've not found a specific gene that is sort of, the reason for it. We have found a chromosome that is highly, highly linked to it. I think it's chromosome 16. And it's not just one gene. Bear in mind, with these things, you don't necessarily find a single gene that, oh, let's get rid of this, let's turn this gene on. And oh,
that's it. It was just one little switch. Yeah, that's switch the other way. Oh,
just switch
all
the ADHD, switch the ADHD gene. No.
Imagine.
But
that's what I've been waiting for.
This is the thing. Even if we were to find, we've got a sort of collection of genes that we think sort of affect it. But that's the thing. It's very nuanced, and it's not one single trigger. So yeah. The way it works is that the genetic factors are kind of like susceptibility to ADHD. It doesn't mean mm-hmm. that it doesn't.
So you inherit a predisposition. You don't inherit ADHD.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure. So I mean, you know, there are other risk factors, but these genetic factors definitely increase your risk of developing ADHD. And as I've said, there are other factors, the neurological. So this is less of a cause and more something we've noticed. There's a slight difference in brain size or brain volume with people with ADHD. Have you heard about this, Kim?
What? That makes sense. I've heard that sometimes small frontal lobe specifically, yes. But I don't know if I'd heard. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, because the frontal lobe is the part of the brain that is one of the parts of the brain that is sort of connected, that is sort of responsible for a lot of the things that people with ADHD have trouble with. Sort of, I think particularly executive function. Yeah. is part of what the frontal lobe does, and I think there's also the cerebellum is apparently slightly smaller in other parts of the brain.
Who's she?
Yeah, so I think those parts can also be slightly smaller than in people who don't have ADHD. So there is a physical thing that we can see that's kind
yeah.
of
yeah exactly right. I'm like yeah, egg on your faces, all those people who say it's not real.
Well, you got to cut open your head and look at your tiny little brain
yeah,
first.
Yeah, egg on my brain.
No brain, just egg.
That's how I feel many times.
Executive dysfunction. There we go. Ooh.
And I'm interested to hear, Kim, I've heard that the flip side of ADHD in terms of you having attention deficit is that you also can experience periods of like absolute hyper-focus.
Mm-hmm. This is true. So yeah, it's like, it's basically accepted now that it's not a deficit of attention. It's a deficit of the ability to regulate it.
Uh-huh.
Which is effectively the same in daily life. Because it's like, oh mate, I can concentrate so good, which is not when you tell me to. But yeah, so I think it connects to how ADHD is basically, again, it's all sort of like, oh, we've got an idea of why it's happening, and it's neurotransmitters, right? We have lower levels of dopamine and norepinephrine in the brain. They're concentration hormones as well as like kind of happy hormones and whatever. So I think the accepted thing, but I might be wrong on this, is that because the production of that isn't regulated in people with ADHD, when something hits our interest or sometimes just at random times, you can get sucked into something, I assume, by a sudden spike. Overproduction of yeah. that or yeah. Right. But the effect is that like you're completely sucked in. And I think neurotypical people can experience things similar to hyperfocus sometimes.
Yeah,
like when
flow.
You have a really good day of flow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with ADHD and stuff, it's like, it's not just that you're concentrating, it's that you're like, your brain exists solely for that purpose. Like
yes.
I've been stuck in something for 8 hours before and forgotten to eat or pee or do anything. Like it can be used. I think if you can harness it, it can be used as a positive, but it's definitely not like a fun little superpower to
yeah.
just accidentally die in a room because you were editing something.
It sounds like, like how when you drive a car, for example, your brain's kind of like treats the car as part of your body. Like it thinks as if it is a car. It sounds like that cranked up to 100 where you are not a person doing a task, you are just the task.
Yeah, me and whatever is in front of me are one.
Yeah.
It's quite beautiful, isn't it?
it's interesting though, because I feel like with a lot of these symptoms, neurotypical people can understand to some degree the mm-hmm. not the experience of living with it so much as, oh, it's just this thing that I do, but...
Mm-hmm.
Either
loads more.
Uncontrolled or a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, that's part of the problem with getting people to believe it, because you tell people a bunch of symptoms and they're things that they have experienced in the last week at random moments.
Sure.
How do you get them to believe that it's debilitating
yeah.
when they're like, oh, when I walk into a room, sometimes I forget why I'm there too. But then on the other hand, it is like a good avenue to be like, oh, you know that feeling? It's like that, but more.
Well, yeah. I think that's the point yeah. of it. Yeah, disorder though, isn't it? Like it's with anxiety and depression, people are like, oh, I feel anxious sometimes. And I'm like, no.
I've been sad.
I feel anxious all times. And that's why it's an issue, you know? And yeah, I think that's something that people don't necessarily think about as much. That
mm-hmm.
these, just if someone's got a particular sort of disorder or a neurodivergence, it's not necessarily something that you've never experienced in your life. It's just
mm-hmm.
they probably experience it a lot more than you do, yeah, to a point, yeah, where it disrupts. Yeah, it's disruptive of their life. So yeah, there's also prenatal factors as well, which means before you're born. And that could be sort of, in particular, your mother smoking or drinking alcohol before you're born while pregnant with you. That can affect, that can increase the risk of developing ADHD, which I think is really interesting. So if you've got those, pre-existing sort of genetic factors that sort of predispose you to having ADHD, if your mother were to smoke or smoke, say, a pack a day, you'd have a higher chance of developing ADHD. And apparently, it could be down to the way that nicotine interacts with the developing brain and sort of affecting how the brain deals with neurotransmitters. Like Kim had mentioned already about how it's linked to sort of neurotransmitters like dopamine and I think norepinephrine. And yeah, it could be that during a development. But this is again one of those things that we need to mention. ADHD right now is kind of a collection of symptoms, and
right.
So it's remember in the gay gene when we were I think or in the gay gene or in the trans episode when we were talking about how what we're looking at right now is not one sort of disorder necessarily.
Yeah.
We're looking at one collection of symptoms. There could be different avenues.
And then you have to eliminate all other possibilities.
Well, no, so it's more that there could be different avenues leading to the same symptoms.
Oh, right.
So
yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
we study people with ADHD, it could be people with, if let's say we find out, the sort of root cause of ADHD, there could be like, let's say five disorders that have ADHD symptoms.
Right.
And so when we're studying this, there could be different routes to lead to these sort of symptoms. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, am I making sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd say so.
Yeah, good. So that's the thing. So when we talk about the genetic factors and the prenatal factors and all of these different factors that could lead to ADHD, bear in mind, we're just talking about the factors that lead towards symptoms rather than factors that lead towards this concrete thing that is ADHD. I feel like... When we're taught in school about sort of disorders and diseases and all of these sort of things, we have the idea of like, oh, so you've got, let's say, I don't want to compare it to the Black Death, but it's the first thing that's come to mind. You've got the Black Death. That's caused by this one thing. There's this collection of symptoms. That's one sort of disease disorder thing on its own. But then you start getting into things like depression and anxiety and more sort of, neurological and psychological things.
It's not like a virus where it's a thing that you can find causing symptoms.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Correlations.
Of symptoms that create it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like one of those things. Okay, so this is like trying to find... this is like saying that diarrhea is a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to find... You look at everyone that's got diarrhea and you're like, okay, why have they all got it?
Yeah.
But it's just a symptom. You know, if you say diarrhea and vomiting, that's a collection of symptoms that could have any number of things that lead to it. And ADHD could very well sort of be the same in that ADHD right now is just a collection of symptoms.
Mm.
And we genuinely don't know. There's even, I think it's opposition disorder. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Yeah.
And that's really highly linked to oppositional defiant disorder. So
that sounds like when someone tells you to do something, you just say no and do something else.
They didn't really take their time naming that, did they?
I mean, ADHD, they didn't either, did they?
Like, that's true.
It's just, what exactly is this thing? Let's just call it that.
No. More importantly, what does this thing look like to me right now?
Yeah, it's like at face value, what is this thing?
Yeah.
Let's not look into it anymore. So oppositional, I think it's oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder, which is probably a better name. Let's call it conduct disorder. Actually, no, that's not even that much better, is it? But the fact is that these two are very, ADHD and the other disorder are comorbid at very high rates to the point where when someone has got, say, very, 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 very intense symptoms of ADHD, they're likely to also have very, very intense symptoms of this other disorder, of conduct disorder. So the point where there are some theories that they could potentially have one root cause and it could be the same sort of disorder with different sort of levels of affecting people. So that when it's really, 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 sort of really bad, you have both at extreme levels. So it could be the same thing. That's the thing. What I'm trying to get here is that we don't really understand this as much as you'd like us to understand it. We've got
like that.
No, it's not.
I feel like we should understand it way more than we do.
No, we should.
Like with everything.
I mean, like 5% of, like at minimum, sort of 5% of children, 2.5% of adults have this disorder. And we've got like very little idea of what it actually is. That's a little bit worrying.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah.
It's like, it's tearing society apart at the seams, untreated ADHD. And they're just like, it's probably fine.
That's fine. You're just a little hyper when you're a kid. Just run
give
around.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, just pop and pull the drugs and let them on their way. Yeah. No. we've gone over the prenatal factors. We've gone over the neurological factors. There's environmental toxins. So that's, like I said, nicotine. Apparently people used to think it was food additives, but apparently food additives. Food additives apparently don't cause ADHD. Who'd have thought?
But mobile phones do, right? That's probably where we're at. To
5G probably does.
It was video games about 10 years ago. That's the issue. Yeah, I think Bart Simpson would have caused it. You know, people calling him.
Yeah.
No, the point here is that so things like nicotine, we do think can affect a child and cause and increase the risk of ADHD. But I don't think there's any real link between ADHD. And sort of normal food additives, really. And then we move on to the sort of psychological factors. And these are ones that I find really interesting. You might have heard of this, Kim. Have you heard of the parent-child interaction? So we know that it's quite heritable. If someone in your immediate family, if you've got ADHD, it's very likely that someone in your immediate family has ADHD.
Right.
But one factor for developing ADHD could be sort of parent-child interactions. So if a parent were to have ADHD, the way that they interact with their child and the fact that they've obviously given their genes to the child could increase the child's risk of developing ADHD. Does that make sense?
Can I share an interesting thing I just found?
Yes.
So on clinicaltrials.gov, so I assume that's a fairly good source I can quote. I was just interested in looking into what you were just talking about the possibility of nicotine in prenatal, like the nicotine smoking from the mother potentially being causing ADHD or correlated with ADHD. Interestingly, this clinical trials website says nicotine may increase attention and reduce hyperactivity and impulsivity, thus may regulate behavior in individuals with ADHD. So although it might cause the ADHD, it also potentially could help people with ADHD become less hyperactive and more and less impulsive.
Yeah. Well, it's an exaggeration, but every adult you know with ADHD is addicted to nicotine. Like, it's it's the, like, we're really predisposed for addiction anyway, but it's because, like, stimulant medication treats ADHD before people understand it or before people have access to medication. They treat it with caffeine, with nicotine, with any kind of stimulant they can get their hands on. And I've seen a few studies that they keep being like, oh, nicotine actually treats ADHD really, really well. What if we can make it not addictive? And they're like, cool. So they get the bit that treats ADHD and they start slicing bits off. And as soon as they get rid of the addictive bit, it stops treating ADHD. It's really not fair. Yeah.
Really interestingly, I've also got a source for what Kim has just said. Apparently, according to CBS News, 40% of adults with ADHD smoke versus only a percent of the population.
Well, there's a really, if you've got ADHD, you've got a really high risk for addiction. And there's so many, I mean, there could be so many factors that, I mean, the sort of neurological factors, really simply as well. It could also be an increased risk of coming into contact with addictive substances through impulsivity. Mm-hmm. If you've got less impulse control, it follows that if someone's going to offer you to do something, you'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And also if you look at the environmental result of ADHD, that kids with ADHD quite often are completely, like, if your brain doesn't help you academically, people with ADHD are far more likely to have dropped out of school or to be disinterested in school by the time they're teenagers and to get themselves in situations where they are seeking interests in other ways and stuff. But like people with ADHD are also like, it's crazy the effect that it has on society and how little we understand it. Like you can look at studies at the prevalence of ADHD in teenage mothers. You can look at the prevalence of ADHD in prison inmates. I remember, I think it was like, I might be making this up where it was, but somewhere like Seattle, they started testing inmates for ADHD as they came into prison. And it was something crazy, like 40 to 60% of them.
Wow. I've got such a good thing on this. This is, and you know what? This is perfectly related to what we were just talking about with the sort of environmental toxins. Lead poisoning, high levels of lead in the blood are correlated to sort of ADHD. So if children are, say, exposed to lead at a young age, they are probably more likely to develop ADHD symptoms. Now, criminals often, you said, so people going into prison often have higher risk for having ADHD, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting here is all of these factors coming together in that you see that... This is really awful, by the way. I'm taking this down an awful route. So, in America, lead paint used to be used for houses. Then it got, lead paint used to be used for houses got outlawed.
No.
They had to get rid of all the sort of lead paint, the lead pipes, all this and that. I think it was lead paint and lead pipes. But obviously, in places where poor people lived, you can read poor as black if you want, because that's what I mean. Where black people lived, they wouldn't change those pipes. They wouldn't get rid of that paint because who cares, you know? And obviously that leads to higher levels of lead. being exposed to the kids means higher levels of lead in the kids system, which could lead to a lot of disorders. One of them being ADHD, which then could lead to higher rates of crime, and all of those things, like literally all leading down into each other. So, I mean, this...
It's like the Matrix, isn't it? Waking up to the Matrix. Everything is ADHD.
This is the thing.
That's it. We fix ADHD. We fix everything.
Always has been.
I think you might want to take a look at this.
But yeah, no, honestly, it's not necessarily all ADHD, but the fact is that these symptoms can be caused by environmental factors as well. And it's important to... pay attention to things like that. And also the addiction thing as well. One of these things that people that are interested in science don't necessarily think of is how factors can really influence each other. So some people will maybe look at the fact that there's higher levels of addiction in people that have ADHD and not necessarily think about why that might be the case. They'll think, what in a person's brain absolutely predisposes them to being addicted? And well, no, it could be environmental factors. It could be all of the different things, like you mentioned, Kim, about sort of people sort of dropping out of school, looking for other ways to entertain themselves. All of those different things that people don't necessarily pay attention to. And honestly, a lot of scientists won't study in the way that they should. And it's just one of those things that I think is really interesting. And this ADHD is kind of this cross-section of all of these different parts of science, or all these different sort of things. Where science should really sort of cross with sociology, and it that deepens our understanding.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that ADHD is a very good test case for where science should be and what science should be doing. So that's I guess that's the environmental toxins. And what was I talking about? I was talking about the parent-child interactions. Yeah. Apparently,
do you remember that?
Yeah. apparently, parents. That have got ADHD can influence their children into having sort of ADHD through sort of positive reinforcement or sort of basically the way that they raise their kids can exacerbate the symptoms. Obviously, they'd have to have ADHD in the first place. It doesn't, having a parent with ADHD, the way that they raise you isn't going to suddenly make you have ADHD. You need to have it. It could just exacerbate the symptoms in some cases, which I find really interesting. The thing is, you might be thinking about the sort of genetic factors as well. They've done adoption studies. So people that have been adopted, their biological parents, if their biological parents have ADHD, the child is more likely to have to develop ADHD, regardless of whether or not the adopted parent does. So we do know that it's sort of a genetic thing and not a we know it's nature, not nurture.
Yeah.
I mean, nurture can affect
it. But nurture can make it worse than it otherwise would manifest.
Yeah, basically, yeah. There's one more sort of causal factor that I want to talk about, which is the theory of mind deficits. Have you heard of that before?
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to insult you a lot here.
I know, right? This is the thing.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's like, what's theory of mind? Oh, it's that thing that develops in chimps. before X age or whatever.
I don't want
to. It's also like, it's one of those, when you have an understanding of it, it's like, it sounds offensive, but I can also identify instances where that is lacking.
Do you want to describe it then?
So theory of mind is something that humans have, that is the understanding that you and another human would have different information on something given your experiences, as in that panning out to your understanding that, like, if I see Corey hide a ball under a cup and Luke hasn't seen that, I know Corey doesn't know where the ball is. Whereas lots of like children under the age of 5 don't have that. And there's an experiment they do to check it where they sort of tell a story of, like, John walks into a room and Linda puts a cookie in a box. And then John leaves the room and Linda swaps the cookies to a different box. And then if you ask a kid whether John would know, they think that because the cookies have moved, John would have to know that. Because they don't yet have an understanding before, like, age 5 that John was out the room and what he wasn't present for, he cannot gain knowledge from.
So interesting. Yeah. And apparently people with ADHD can have sort of a deficit in that. And this kind of can show in children where, and this is an issue, I don't know if I've mentioned this already, ADHD is something that is very, very heavily sort of seen as a child disorder, more so than an adult one. We're coming out of that now. So a lot of the examples I'm giving, because they've come from studies and books, focused very heavily on kids.
Yeah. It's like trying to find any resource for adult ADHD and you're like, oh, here's one. And it's like, how to manage your child with ADHD. Like, thank you. A goodbye.
Literally the NHS. It says, if you're a child or you has symptoms, and it always starts with if your child does.
Yeah. And doesn't it have, I think I read recently, there's like this whole section on child ADHD. And then there's like a little afterthought that's like, adults can also have this.
Literally, yes. I was looking at it today and literally, yes. I just wanted to, I wanted to show you as well. I've got a big book. It's my psychopathology book that I used to research. And chapter 16, childhood and adolescent psychological problems. That's where you find ADHD.
Oh dear.
Yeah, genuinely. Oh, dear. It goes into the adult stuff, but it's in the childhood and adolescent section.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering why you said the symptoms have to be present before 12.
Yeah. Well, it's because
to get the diagnosis.
Because you don't need to have been diagnosed before 12. You just need to have had, because if they develop later, then it's not ADHD.
Yeah,
right.
It could be caused by something else.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have hit their heads and had long-term concussion, and it's displayed as ADHD for many, many years. Like, injuries to the frontal lobe of the brain looks exactly like ADHD. Well, and a lot of other symptoms can, a lot of other conditions can have the same symptoms. So they just need to rule out everything else before they're allowed to tell you.
But that's the thing though, like, injury to the frontal lobe of the brain, that's effectively what ADHD could be in some people, because with being affected by chemicals or certain genetic factors.
Bloody chemicals.
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 Gosh. I found a bottle the other day that was full. Okay, it was supposedly full of, I think, tea tree oil. But on the bottle it said,
oh, I remember this.
Chemical free. And I was very frustrated because that bottle was not chemical
free. Is it an empty bottle?
No, it had something
it had stuff in it.
Yeah, so it was definitely not chemical free.
There's definitely chemicals in there.
Okay, little aside gone. Let's get back to whatever we were talking about. Sorry, do you know what? To be fair, I think this episode is actually going to be quite good for our listeners with ADHD, because a lot of them comment saying the fact that you don't stick to one topic for very long is very good because it helps me keep focused. We genuinely got another comment like that today, and I'm like, okay,
really?
good.
You like this one.
Because we can't stick to one thing, honestly. It's tangent after tangent after tangent. We were talking about theory of mind, weren't we?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, good. Okay. So
we were about to call me a chimp.
Yes, we were about to call you a chimp. So the theory of mind deficits. Apparently, so they find that the way that this sort of shows is in kids finding it difficult to integrate into social situations, not only because they could be impulsive, but also because they just can't necessarily figure out what the intentions of their peers are. So it's difficult to relate in that way. And then also, if you're, say, and this is the example from the book that I was reading, let's say your kid is impulsive, if someone bumps into them and they like just hit the kid for bumping into them, and they can't figure out what, like, you know, is going on in the other kid's head, you can understand why that would lead to quite a lot of dysfunction in your life, because you can't relate sometimes to other people, and you can be impulsive and sort of lash out. But yeah, Chimp Kim, what do you? Well, actually, not chimp, because chimps have got this.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I mean, it's another sort of thought that it's another sort of area in which people with ADHD may have trouble, and it's something that if you don't have trouble with it, it's very difficult to sort of imagine how it would manifest. Really,
I saw I think I tweeted about this recently. I saw this article by this fucking bitch who she's like, right, she goes off on one about how her daughter with ADHD is a psychopath, right? And like, psychopathy is a thing, of course. And you know, there's a lot of stigma around people who sociopaths or psychopaths, or
it's
have
valid. You're valid.
Yeah, you're valid. but like, she took that and she was talking about how basically, and I've seen other people do this online as well, they talk about how they think that ADHD is connected to narcissistic personality disorder or sociopathy, because what basically they're taking what they see, which is a kid potentially without the attention regulation ability to come up from what they're doing to check how other people are feeling, and emotional regulation. Like if someone upsets you and you get really angry, children in particular aren't going to be very good at stopping and thinking what were all the contributing factors that went into that and how each person might be feeling, which when you have a basic understanding of ADHD, like anyone who's listened from the start to this point of this podcast can understand how the symptoms of ADHD would contribute to that output. Like you could see how it would look like that. But this woman was just like, I think she is an unempathetic asshole. She doesn't care about anybody. Like she won't share with her friends because she's an asshole. And people, like, it's just this ongoing trend that people are like, I've got it, guys. I've got it. There's no such thing as ADHD. They're just rude. And it's really weird, but it's climbing up in the distance.
You have absolutely spoiled the end of this podcast.
Oh, you?
You're welcome.
Yeah, I actually come to the conclusion that ADHD doesn't exist, and you are all just a complete.
We're going to do a complete U-turn at the end.
That's really interesting to me, Kim, because that article you're talking about, or the assertion that somebody with ADHD who looks on the outside to be like so sociopathic or whatever, that to me, that signals that the person with that opinion doesn't have a very strong theory of mind, because they're not able to attribute that they might have a different mental state.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's also bizarre because like, you know, we've talked about contributing factors and we've talked about DSM symptoms. But as you said at the start, Corey, there's so many symptoms, which is why it's such a confusing, misunderstood disorder. And things that were in the diagnostic criteria for what we knew to be ADHD 50 years ago are now gone because they're not convenient, including emotional regulation. So like, this is something that adults with ADHD have to sort of discover for themselves. There's a huge culture in ADHD of people just having to figure out the disorder themselves and having to work through things, because medicine at point of service, like when you go to the doctor, is so behind. There's all this research to tell us like the correlation of certain things and extra symptoms that might not be listed, but when you go to the doctor, those people don't know it. Psychiatrists in the UK barely have to study ADHD at all. They have no idea what it is. And so emotional dysregulation is a huge part of ADHD, and the inability to manage that is like quite a debilitating symptom for people. So it also comes with huge feelings of guilt and shame from like small things of rejection. Like people with ADHD are very sensitive to failure or to rejection or whatever, and very empathetic to the point of like, if many people throughout childhood and as adults with ADHD report that if they hurt someone's feelings, it would be like crushing for several days. And it's like, clearly people talking about this as if people with ADHD don't have empathy has never had a conversation with someone with ADHD or never cared to look into it, because it sounds like the opposite of every report I've ever heard from someone with ADHD.
But to be fair, the thing is with ADHD, it's something that is very, it's fairly well understood in terms of literature, I find. Mm-hmm. Like, from what I've read, we've got a decent grasp of it. The fact that we've got even sort of an idea of what chromosome, some like genes that sort of affect it can be on. We've got a pretty good grasp of it. But mm-hmm. the public consciousness, it's so poorly understood. I mean, you've basically got, I've said already, Bart Simpson is kind of the poster child for like classic ADHD, but he's really not, you know, as a sort of character. That's the thing. The general public has an idea of what ADHD is, and it's really, really, really off. It's just not at all accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a bit like OCD as well, I guess. Like it's one thing to have, like when there's a condition and people don't understand it, usually they know that they don't really understand it. But OCD and ADHD in particular, things where people are like, ah, I know what that is. And it's like the complete opposite of what they actually think.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's quite similar with autism as well, where you can basically go your whole life. And if you've not met someone that that knows they've got ADHD or knows they're autistic or any sort of neurodivergence like that in that sort of vein. If you go your whole life without knowing that you've really met someone that's with that, you can think you've got a solid idea of it and be completely wrong. And as soon as you know someone or live with someone or are close to someone that has ADHD or is autistic, doesn't follow the very typical sort of societal idea of what those disorders are, you have such a much deeper understanding of what it actually is and how it actually affects someone's life. And I hope that's what someone listening can get from this podcast episode, I hope. You know, that'd be really lovely if you could have a little bit more of an insight into what living with ADHD is like. But yeah, honestly, it's one of those things where it's really frustrating that we think everyone thinks they've got a great handle on it, but they just don't.
No.
Yeah. That's a shame, isn't it? Shall we talk about the treatment options? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm your doctor now. So there's obviously, I say this so often, there's no cure for ADHD because there's not really something to cure.
Thanks, Curry.
Yeah, look at you, kid. So there is no cure for ADHD, like I said, because there's nothing to cure. But you can have treatment that can help you deal with the symptoms or alleviate the symptoms somewhat. So you could basically two options here. You've got medicine or therapy, but it's usually a combination of both which works best. And you've got to get treatment usually from a specialist. And this is from the NHS, by the way. So it says, such as a pediatrician or a psychiatrist. So again, pediatrician comes first here as well. Although the condition might be monitored by a GP. So basically, you could go to your pediatrician or your psychiatrist, and then your GP will probably deal with the sort of day-to-day, day-to-day, week-to-week, whatever sort of management of it. So there are five different types of medicine that are licensed for the treatment of ADHD. Those are methylphenidate. I should have read these beforehand. I skim words like these because I'm like, I don't need to know exactly
I'll read that when it comes up.
It's like characters' names in a book, innit?
Yeah, exactly. And then you get three chapters in and you've got two characters that have got very similar names and you didn't realize they were two different people.
What do you mean her name isn't Hermione?
There are genuinely so many characters' names that I know the first and last letters and nothing else because that's all that's all you got to pay attention to.
That's all you need to read.
Yeah,
it's all you need to read. Just recognize the shape of the word. That's it.
I know what the mouthfeel of the word is. I don't know how to pronounce
mouthfeel.
It's like a weird kind of synesthesia. It's like, ooh, what's the mouthfeel of my name, Murray? Ooh.
So you've got methylphenidate, dexamphetamine, lisdexamfetamine, atomoxetine
for your ADHD. Yeah, I'm cured.
I like you. Atomoxetine.
Have you tried it though? Kim, have you tried
what, atomic kitten?
Little atomic kitten? Maybe a little.
No,
bit?
I haven't actually. But well, we my psychiatrist didn't offer that, so my options were limited.
You should self medicate with Atomic Kitten.
Oh, give it a go. I've self medicated with everything else. So.
Oh dear. Atomic Setin and Guanfacine. I may have pronounced those incorrectly, but come at me.
Do you have the brand names for those?
No, those are these.
Methylphenidate is Ritalin.
Uh huh.
Oh. Okay.
Then there's like slow release ones. And then I don't remember which one's which. That's the one I can give you. That's the one I've tried. There you go. You're welcome.
I actually might have the brand name, so I'm going to go into them.
Yeah, Adderall should be in the list, but Adderall I don't think is like licensed for early line treatment in the UK.
Mm.
They're not a fan.
I mean this is all from the NHS, so they might not use brand names, but I do have a sort of breakdown of each of the five there, which mm-hmm. we can go through in just a sec. So essentially, like I said, these drugs, they don't cure ADHD, because nothing to cure. Your brain just work different. And some of them need to be taken every day, but some of them you can just take, as the NHS says, on school days.
It's so infuriating, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't hold this in because I thought it was really funny. But this
just
is
a little interjection about that in the real world, though. So when I first, I figured out that something was up when I was like 14, but I didn't seek diagnosis till I was like old enough to do it on my own, and I think I was about 19. So went to the GP. GP was like, "Cool, you need Brain Man." Sent me to some like mental health thing, but it's phone interviews, right?
Mm.
And like this, I mean, this is a conversation for maybe a later point, but just everything about the way ADHD is treated is impossible to do when you have ADHD. It's really annoying. Mm. So they were like, "Okay, here's a letter." And I was like, "Hello, letter." And it said, "Please call this number within these dates." And I was like, "Okay." And then, I don't know, maybe like 3 months later, I was like, "Oh, okay, I missed it." So I had to go back to the GP. And I think it happened twice. I don't think it was three times, right? So this all happened over the span of about 18 months. And I finally call the people. I'm like, "Hey there, attempt number two. I think I've got ADHD. I would like a diagnosis, please." And they were like, "Ah, how old are you?" It's like 19. They said, "Okay, have you been diagnosed before?" I was like, "Nope, that's why I'm here." And they were like, "Okay, here's the thing. We diagnose children and we will treat adults who have had a diagnosis in the past, but we do not diagnose adults."
I wonder why adults are underdiagnosed.
Yeah. So like if I already had a diagnosis, they could refer me to get treatment, but I couldn't get diagnosed. And I was like, "Okay, hun, then what do I do?" And she was like, "I don't know. You could try a support group."
On your own.
Maybe it was a test. Maybe you've got to miss it three times and then they're like, "Aha, you passed the ADHD.
The secret password is to try three times.
You miss it three times and they're like, "Oh, you've definitely got ADHD. There you go. There's your treatment. There's all this."
Yep.
Yeah.
If only. Mm. But no, they berate you instead.
Well, it's to be fair, it's really similar to, I guess, depression and anxiety. When you want to get those, it's like, okay, you've got to come to your meetings. And if you miss like two of them or three of them, then you get no more.
You clearly don't want to be treated.
It's like, but I can't get out of bed someday. Doesn't matter.
That might be a symptom.
Yeah.
Take the hint.
This is the thing, though. It's really frustrating. It's like, imagine if, I was going to say the broken leg clinic. Imagine if, you know, to get your broken leg set and
at
cast.
The older
and
broken cast, leg clinic.
You had to climb up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
Did you guys see I tweeted a thing about this that I was quite pleased with that I thought of while I was opening a pack of scissors. And I was like, people with ADHD to like adhere to strict deadlines and like do appointments within specific windows is a bit like when they sell scissors in that packaging that's only openable using scissors.
Very good tweet, Kim.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
So methylphenidate is the most commonly used medicine for treatment of ADHD. It belongs to a group of medications called stimulants, which Ooh. Kim has told us about already. Basically, they just increase your brain activity.
Sounds very simple, isn't it?
Yeah. They stimulate you.
Oh, you need more brain?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. More brain. Your brain's small? You get more brain. If you get your brain, more fast.
Big brain energy.
Gosh. I feel like a lot of people listening to this now are going to start claiming that they've got very small brains. Because I feel like, honestly, I think a lot of our listeners have got ADHD, because, I mean, or they're probably some of the most prolific commenters. But
so this is more great press for ADHD, isn't it?
They just don't stop.
Kim, what are you wrapping around your hand?
My headphone cord.
I do that.
Yeah, we've.
I'm playing with a battery. I've been playing with this battery for about 10 minutes. I just keep twiddling it in my hand.
I specifically wore rings so that I could fiddle in a way that would not be, like, annoying.
I do find it very funny that in the ADHD episode, literally all four of us are fidgeting with something at the exact same time.
I literally can't stop. This is great. I'm just fiddling with the battery. It's so
that
nice.
Was the thing. I was like, I'm not going to switch it off. But I was also just so aware that particularly for this, people were going to be looking for it.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be watching it. It's like when you go for an ADHD appointment thing, they don't just ask you the questions, they also monitor you.
Yeah.
And they watch how difficult it is for you to concentrate. And the report you get back is... it's just not the most uplifting thing. It's like, kept fiddling with hair, wouldn't stop tapping on table.
That's so incredibly, like, rude.
In it.
Let's just put you in a situation where your symptoms are going to come out. Let's watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make them squirm.
So, methylphenidate, yeah, thanks. It can be offered to adults, teenagers, and kids over the age of 5 with ADHD. Why are you giving drugs to your kid below the age of 5? I don't really think a kid below the age of 5 with ADHD is going to seem too different to most children.
Yeah.
Unless it's quite severe.
This is the thing, though. Sorry to cut you off with your drugs, Corey. But just
never cut.
With the drugs thing, like, some doctors think that you should give drugs first because they enable someone with ADHD to be in a better position to learn strategies to help fight the condition, right? Other people say it should be a last resort, and I think I'm in the first group. I think that's what most people are. But I understand, like, I don't know. And again, if other people with ADHD have found that this works for this is a personal opinion thing. But the reason that medication is necessary is because it's kind of, you can't change your environment enough to make it not noticeable. But a child's environment, like, I would need medication because I need to be able to function in the society or I will die. But child, like, what allowances are you not able to make for a 5-year-old?
Yeah.
To change their school or working environment to accommodate for that. And again, I'm not, you know, if parents or teachers have come to this decision and found that that's the only way that works, I'm not insulting that. But I'm curious.
Well, I'm glad you bring this up, because I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day. So this is someone who very much enjoys watching all those awful shows with, like, very poorly behaved kids. And, let's go into the schools and look at these
how naughty
schools
they're being. Yeah,
and this person has ADHD, so we're sitting watching. And in particular, it was this one boy who was sort of, I think, 14 years old. And within the first 5 seconds, we both looked at each other. We're like, that kid has ADHD. literally within 5 seconds. And then we were watching a little bit more, and the kid was showing, like, very clear, like, signs of ADHD. Mm-hmm. And yet the sort of the framing of the program was, he just doesn't pay attention in school.
Yeah.
And they just don't know what to do with him anymore. So he's just a bad kid. And I'm sitting there like, this kid has ADHD. You could just, why don't schools just cater to that? You know, like, and like the kid was very clearly intelligent. Like, he was, like, very, I think he was obviously into cars. He was really into horses, and he was, like, very good with the horses. And it's like, you just accommodate the ADHD, and you've got it.
Yeah.
And you'll have a kid that can achieve perfectly well.
How old was this program? Was it a new program?
Oh, this was from the either late noughties or 2010s.
Okay. Hopefully things have changed slightly, but maybe not.
The sort of educating Yorkshire and stuff, things like all of that. I mean, they have
kids.
Yeah,
there's
that
so many that are so obvious, aren't there?
Yeah. And
I've watched them as well, and I'm like, easy peasy, ADHD, next question.
No, exactly, though. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, well, hold on. Why are you treating these kids as, like, you know, the kids get expelled, excluded, and then... sent to other schools and things. Why don't you just restructure schools so that they work for all kids rather than saying, this is the one way that you need to work, and if your brain doesn't work like that, then we'll tell you you're bad and drop you.
Yeah. They never asked them, that's the thing. Because I always said, right, when I was at school, like, when I was like 14, I was pretty sure I had ADHD. And I was so ready to tell someone that if at any point a teacher had been like, hey, why are you always late? Why are you skipping school? Like, why are you not doing your homework? I was so desperate for the opportunity to be like, because I'm really struggling, please help me. But they just never asked. They're like, ah, she not try, she not care. Goodbye. It's like, why? It's not that hard. Just ask people.
Well, no.
Why are you doing this?
Because you're a bad kid, probably, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
But I suppose
because they want to make me so disenfranchised with the system that I go to prison.
Kim,
that's the aim.
How early did you realize that the experience you were having was different to the experience everyone else was having?
Isn't that mad? Yeah, I think about this all the time. I'm like, I think it's mad that even though my brain was the only brain I'd ever lived in, I still knew that it was different.
Right.
And it's mad. I just like, there were things that were outward symptoms that I couldn't do that other people could. But I can't even explain it. It was just a point when I was like 13, 14, where I was like, Someone's weird.
Someone's up.
Mm.
And I don't just think it's the fact that I'm secretly queer. I think there's something else in there too.
Well, we'll put a pin in that one, right?
Put a pin right at the... Pop that one there.
Something that more one than that.
We'll deal with that one in just a bit, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, you've got... I mean, what I find really interesting is that you've got such a supreme self-awareness with this. And I think it's honestly really, really, which is why I'm so happy to have you on this episode, because I think it's really, really helpful in an educational aspect that you're very, very good at making it an understandable thing to, you know, people, share with people.
People who have never experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of resource online for adults parenting children with ADHD. And there's a lot of resources online now that explain it quite clinically. But what I found that there was really lacking was like, what it feels like day to day and how to explain that to other people. Because if you can't fix it without external help, then it at least really helps for your housemates and your mum and your teacher to understand you a bit more. And I think that's what we need more of. Just like it's people who get it online and can give you the vocabulary for it, I think.
Fantastic. Good job, Kim.
Thanks, gang.
Yeah, so we're talking about methylphenidate.
Third time lucky, Corey. We'll get through this section.
We will, honestly. The reason I just want to talk about these drugs is because my favorite part of drugs is the side effects. No.
My favorite parts of drugs are the side effects.
Said no one ever.
My favorite part of talking about drugs on this show is talking about the side effects, because often the drugs, you know, we'll say, oh, this drug can deal with it, and then there are just awful, horrible, terrible side effects.
Yeah. Like antidepressants that cause depression.
Yeah.
Well, antidepressants that cause depression really wind me up. Because, so you've got someone who's in a very vulnerable position, and you know, you give them this drug, and they say, oh cool, drug help? And you're like, yes, drug help. But first, drug make worse.
This is a test. You get through it, you get better.
And then you're like, oh, okay, cool. Well, while I put up with the bit where it gets worse, will I have some extra support? And they're like, silly boy.
And then when you say, okay, right, but let's say I find it really difficult to keep on taking drug, you know, and I take a little break, will I be able to just start again? It's okay. They say, no. If you take a break, you go right back to the start. It's bad again. Like, genuinely, with antidepressants, it takes like 2 weeks for them to, like,
there's
for them to go up in your system.
There's some ADHD meds that have that too.
Really?
And they're like, okay, this will work fine. You just got to make sure that you take it at the same time every day and you never forget to take it. And I'm like, okay.
But that's the problem.
Every day. I see.
I was on antidepressants for a little bit, and it was that exact thing. It's the same time every single day, and I'm like, yes, but you see, some days I am asleep all day.
Yes,
I simply cannot. But if you miss it, so it takes 2 weeks to build up, and then if you miss it,
it knocks
you right back down, and those 2 weeks are horrible. And coming off it for 2 weeks is horrible. So you've basically got like. It's basically this sort of like strict regimen of constantly taking it, which is really, really difficult. Obviously, it's not a doctor's fault. There's nothing they can do about the effect of the drugs. But it's just very frustrating, I think. Yeah. So methylphenidate. Take it 2 to 3 times a day. Or, you can take it. You guys don't really care how often you take it. If you care about how often you take it, go speak to your doctor or look at the NHS.
I care.
You care?
I care.
Okay, well, look at the NHS website.
Okay,
so,
I will.
There are some common side effects. Increase of blood pressure and heart rate, but only a little one. Loss of appetite. which obviously can lead to a weight loss or difficulty gaining weight, trouble sleeping, headaches, stomach aches, and mood swings. Interestingly, mood swings are apparently also a symptom of ADHD. It's one of those things. We'll just make it worse a little bit, but make it better.
But yeah.
There's the second one, dexamphetamine, which is similar to dexamphetamine and kind of works in the same way. The side effects of this are decreased appetite, as I've said, aggression, drowsiness, dizziness, headaches, diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting.
Oh, goodness.
Mm.
Very good.
But you'll be able to concentrate.
Yes.
But you'll be
on
quiet
your diarrhea.
Your kid is just like, it's just like feeling nauseous, spewing out diarrhea, and you're like, but at least they're quiet.
Time for you to learn.
Should we change? Keep on making that noise. Should we change schools, or should we just make kids feel awful? Which one would be best, I think?
Well, schools already make lots of kids feel awful.
Yeah, that's true. But at least if we don't change schools and give kids drugs, they stay quiet.
Mm.
Right?
Children should be seen and not heard.
And the ones that don't will just be sent to prison.
And then there's dexamphetamine, which is similar to the one that I just mentioned previously. It's got the same side effects, appetite, lower appetite, mood swings, agitation, aggression, dizziness, headaches, diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting. And then there's atomoxetine. It's a very difficult word to say, but it looks very, very cool. Type it out and you'll have a good time. It's a selective noradrenaline reuptake inhibitor, SNRI. Basically, what it does is it increases noradrenaline levels in the brain. So that's a neurotransmitter. So it passes chemical messages between brain cells, obviously, and it can help you in concentration and controlling impulses. But the side effects are increase in blood pressure and heart rate. Again, nausea and vomiting, stomach aches, trouble sleeping, dizziness, headaches, and irritability. And it's also been linked to some more serious side effects, including liver damage and other ones that we're not going to mention on the podcast because they're very dark and grim.
Oh, no.
But yeah, you can guess.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And then there's guanfacine, which basically improves attention by acting on a particular part of the brain. And they can give it to teenagers and kids over the age of 5. And it shouldn't be given to adults. It's usually taken once a day. And the side effects of it are tiredness and fatigue, headaches, abdominal pain, and dry mouth. So yeah, you're not got a lot of huge options for ADHD medication, but it's similar to like most of the sort of like psychological neuro stuff, mm-hmm. where there are pretty rubbish side effects. And we don't necessarily understand all of the mechanisms at play.
Are these different drugs? Because there are like several different drugs and it sounds like they're in different drug classes as well. Like some of them sound like amphetamines. And are they all amphetamines?
So no, they're not. So we've basically got, you've got stimulants, you've got, you've got stimulants and you've got one that affects, that increases neurotransmitter.
So what I wondered about them is... are these different drugs and these different drugs that fall into different drug classes potentially, are they to cure? Because we're talking about how there are different underlying causes for the same class of symptoms. Are these different drugs basically targeting different sort of potential root causes of ADHD, or are they just like different ones that might react differently in different people for other reasons?
Just to clarify, I'm not saying that there are definitely different root causes for ADHD. I'm saying there could be different root causes.
They all basically address the same thing, I think, which is not enough neurotransmitters. And they address it in different ways. I think some of them make you produce more dopamine, whereas some of them stop the reuptake of dopamine. Some of them work on your epinephrine and stuff like that. So generally, they do all do it in the same way, just using different neurotransmitters, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. Yeah, but again, just to clarify, I'm not saying that there are definitely loads of different routes that you could take to getting ADHD. I'm just saying that it's important to remember that there might be different mechanisms that cause ADHD, because it's just a collection of symptoms, and we don't know specifically the root cause as of yet. So I just to be clear, we're not saying that there are multiple root causes. We're just saying be open to the idea that there could be. So those are all of the drugs, not in the world, just the ones that... all wow. five of the drugs that are have ever existed. No, those are the drugs that are licensed to treat ADHD in the UK. If you want to find out the brand names, I'm sure you can just Google them. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter unless you're speaking to a doctor. Not Spawn. No. Oh, God, no. Yeah, so why don't we move on to therapy?
Okay, please. So I wish we could. Something really bad.
Luke, I don't think we have the time for you, really.
You sound just like my psychiatrist, Corey.
That was genuinely a running joke at the start of this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
That's what my psychiatrist
said. That's what my psychiatrist said, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to bring that back. I'm going to bring it back.
You're going to bring it back?
Yeah.
Let's bring it back.
All the way from episode one.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God. Blast from the past. Anyway.
Because I don't have a psychiatrist anymore because I can't afford it.
Well, maybe this podcast should pay for your psychiatrist, though.
Yeah, please. He's only £150 an hour. Please.
Can you deal with 10 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, that's why I stopped going.
I feel like you need to, like, you'd honestly be spending a decent part of that hour talking about, oh man, I'm so stressed out about my money problems because I'm paying for this psychiatrist that's costing so much.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's psychoeducation. It means you gosh, this is what the NHS says, by the way. You or your child will be encouraged to discuss ADHD and its effects. It can help children, teenagers, adults make sense of being diagnosed with ADHD and help you cope or live with the condition. There's also behavior therapy, which provides support for carers of children with ADHD and can also involve teachers as well as parents. And so this is basically for people who are around people who've got ADHD, particularly parents and teachers.
Yeah, it's always support for them. How to cope with that annoying idiot is following you around and being too noisy instead of like how to cope with living with this condition.
Yeah, obviously. But no, that about 50% of what the NHS, the treatment, 50% of the sort of therapy options on the NHS page are for people that don't have ADHD.
Yeah.
But in fact, the people that are around them. And then there's also CBT as well, cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a classic. We talk about it all the time because it's just what you do whenever someone's got something wrong in the noggin.
A fan favorite.
Cool. So those are all of the therapy options. Those are all of the treatment options. To be honest, there's a fair few. I think the issue is less finding out what we can treat it with and more having access to the treatment. Because especially from Kim's anecdote, it seems to be very difficult. And I can say that there is data to support that it is very difficult to get treatment for ADHD. And in fact, for basically anything else in that sort of vein, it's a real failing of our health system, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I've got for you guys today on ADHD. Is there anything else you want to add? Anyone?
Not personally, no, but I've learned a lot.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Any answers?
Any questions for Kim?
Do you experience any is ADHD always constant or do you have days where it's worse or days where it's better?
It is always constant, but there are days where it's better. I think the days where it's better are the only reason I know how bad it is. Like sometimes when I was taking medication, it would treat it right. Or sometimes I just have a day when my brain works and I would be like, oh my God, is everyone living like this? What are you all doing? Like, I intended to do three things today and they're all done. Sick. And then I go back to normal, lying on my bedroom floor, confused.
Well, that's it for the episode, I think. Well done. Thank you very much for joining us, Kim. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
I have a YouTube channel where I sometimes make videos about various things, including ADHD. I also, in the works, have a podcast that doesn't exist yet, but will exist soon, where me and my friend Steph, a local stand-up comedian, we rewatched every episode of Torchwood and laugh at it. It's called yes. Rats in Boiler Suits, because weevils from Torchwood are rats in boiler suits, which I think encompasses everything Torchwood is. And I guess, I mean, if you care about that, it'll exist soon. We've got a Twitter, Rats in Boiler Suits, and I've got a YouTube. Oh, it's just Kim. You're welcome.
So this episode was brought to you, voted upon by our patrons, as we mentioned at the top of the show. If you head over to patreon.com/SciGuys, you can sign up there and get involved in a bunch of cool perks, like bonus episodes every single month. You get to see every single episode of SciGuys live, whenever you want, obviously after they've been broadcast. You get to vote on episodes. You get to submit episode topics. You get to have little bonus bits. You even get to see new series that we're working on before anyone else. Loads of great stuff over there.
It's really too much, isn't there?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. We're giving you too much. We're giving you too much. We're going to start taking it away. No, and also, we're really close to hitting 150 patrons. We just hit 100 patrons. We're close to hitting 150. And once we hit 150, we're going to do a very, very special live stream for everyone where the patrons will be able to call in. So definitely sign up so you can join in on that. But why don't we thank all of our new patrons for this month?
Yes. Starting off with Phoenix Barnett. Thank you, Phoenix Barnett.
Fantastic. Thank you, Anna Mugs. Yeah.
Thank you, Emily Bloom. Nice, easy one for me.
Thank you to Carolina Alexandra Farsuiks.
Thank you to Annie.
Thank you, Idle Knight 6.
Thank you to Calvin Westerfeld.
Thank you to Anne.
Thank you to Rada Hoffner.
Thank you to Nessie.
Luke, this one's for you.
My favorite patron ever. Thank you to Mark Complete, somebody who signed up when I misread the Mark Complete button as a patron. So thank you, Mark Complete.
Thank you to Noah.
Thank you to Evan McCluskey.
Thank you to our favorite Jamp.
Oh, thank you. I assume that's me.
Thank you to Cara Iula Plemenu.
Thank you to Paige Williams.
Thank you to Portable Jamie.
Thank you to Caleb.
Thank you to Mel G.
Thank you, Daisy Shelley.
Thank you, Jack Dimitriou.
Thank you to Rachel Howell.
Thank you, Alexander Ivans.
Thank you to Jessica Padalis.
Thank you to Morvan.
Thank you to Kinky Little Bee.
Thank you to Reese Bevan.
Thank you to Cloud.
Yeah, thank you, Clouds, for raining upon thank us. You for Give rain. Us water. Thank you, Tori.
No. Clip that, please.
Thank you to the Tory party for all that you do.
Oh dear.
Thank you to Nemi.
Thank you to Maida Avdik.
Thank you, Joe.
Maida Avdik.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Ben Watson.
Thank you to Helena Kariri.
Thank you, Max Burton.
Thank you, Flora Anna.
Thank you to Lucy Powell.
Thank you, Alfie Adams.
It's the name of one of my rats. Thank you to Heather Bunning.
And thank you to, it's me, Olivia Louise F.
It's you?
Thank you all.
Not me. No, not
thank
me.
Thank you all. Wow, that is so many patrons. That's, ooh, I think, 40, 41.
40. Thank you to Kim for sitting through that list.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. Biggest thanks to Kim.
Oh, now spinning around with a cable. Very good, Kim.
Well, thank you, Kim, for joining us, and thank you all for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Champkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
I am, oh, it's just Kim on YouTube and Twitter, and still just Kim everywhere else.
Bye.